the question of whether there are any differences between men and women with respect to this mitzvah. So we already mentioned that the Gemara seems to say explicitly that there are not. One and both a husband, or both a man and a woman, must equally be mechabed and yira, most revere, equally their mother and their father. However, the Gemara does darshan as well that there can be a difference. And that could be derived from the pasuk in this past week's parsha we just read a couple days ago. Ish imo ve'aviv tira'u. It says ish. Why not isha? Isn't it isha also chayeves and yiras avaim? And the Gemara answers that there could be a difference. Not when she is single, but if she's married. The Gemara says as follows. Tana rabbanan. Ish. Ein li ela ish. Isha minayin. How do we know that both a man and a woman are chayev in yiras avaim? As we said, yiras avaim refers to reverence of one's parents. Kishu omer tira'u. The end of the pasuk is plural. Ish imo ve'aviv tira'u. Plural. That means both ish and isha. So imke matam alomar ish. Why did the Torah specify ish? Ish sipek biyada lasos. Isha ein sipek biyada lasos. Mipnei shereshus acherem aleha. There are times when a woman is married, she's unable to be mekayim this mitzvah as a man can, and therefore, in this case, she's exempt. And therefore, the Gemara continues, Amar of Idi Baravin, Amar Rav, Nisgar Shashneim Shavin, Memela, if she's to be divorced, or widowed, or she's not yet married and never married, then there is no difference between a husband and a wife. So what the Gemara seems to be saying is that because of her obligations towards her husband, that will sometimes preclude her ability to be Mekayim Kibud Avaim fully, and as such, the Torah exempts her, at least to the degree that she's unable to do it. Meaning to say, when her responsibilities towards her husband preclude the ability for her to be Mekayim Kibud Avaim, then she's exempt. If not, so then she's equally obligated. So fundamentally, the obligations are equal, but there is a situation when there is a difference. So the question is, what exactly is this referring to? In other words, when would it be that a woman's obligations, let's call them family obligations, would preclude her ability to be mekayim kibud av va'im properly? So we have to figure out what exactly this is referring to. Meaning to say, the Gemara said she's unable to do it because, to use the Lashon of the Gemara, mipnei sherishus acherim aleha, because other people's rishus are upon her. So, when you read the Gemara at first glance, sounds like a woman, a married woman at least, is obligated to serve her husband, I suppose, and therefore she's unable to serve her parents. And there's another Gemara that sounds this way as well. We'll have to figure out what this means, but we'll say the other Gemara as well, and then we'll try to figure out what this means both theoretically and practically. So the other Gemara says, Sha'al ben almana achas es Rabbi Lazar, Abba omer hashkeni mayim, v'ima omer es hashkeni mayim, a husband and a mother and a father both say, please bring me a glass of water, Eze mehen koden, who should you give first? So the answer is, Hanach kvod imcha v'ase kvod avicha, sh'ata v'imcha chayavin b'chod avicha. Since you and your husband, since the child and the wife are equally, are both obligated to bring the father slash husband a glass of wife, of water, so therefore you should give the father first before the mother, right? So that too indicates that there's some type of obligation for a wife to serve her husband. So what exactly does that mean? And this is obviously a broader question. I have to admit, one that I'm not so comfortable talking about, especially in this audience. But what can I do? We said we're going to do Hilchos Kibud Av Ha'im, so we're not going to skip anything. And I think it's actually very important to try to understand what Chazal are getting at here, or the truth is even the Psukim, because the Psukim comes from the Psukim Ish Imo Vaviv Tivo. So what the Psukim are getting at here, what is the nature of this difference, and specifically, what is the nature of a wife's obligations towards her husband? So I haven't answered the question yet, so I guess you have an answer. Yes. Yes. So it's a good question that's beyond the scope of tonight's discussion, which is that there are times when the Gemara makes a drasha about the masculine words in the Torah, and we understand them to exclude, to imply that women might be different. And there are other times where we don't necessarily do that. We presume that the neutral gender is masculine. And when you make the drush and when you don't is a difficult question to know. In general, understanding drushos of Gemara, meaning to say how the Gemara knows to make, you know, darshan this word this way and not other ways, is very difficult. And there are times that, though I have been studying Gemara for a number of years, I don't really even understand the drasha. The Rishonim generally explain, and there are Mefarshim that try to explain. So that's a very good question, but beyond the scope of tonight's shiur. Okay, so again, to repeat, the question is, what are a wife's obligations towards her husband such that the Torah distinguishes between kibud avim of a male and female? So one might be tempted to quote the following Rambam, and before I quote it, I'm going to say in advance that I think this is the wrong answer. But I'm quoting it because I've heard people suggest that the explanation is based off of this Rambam. And this is a Rambam that's a very important Rambam, also a Rambam that is... often used to, I believe, misrepresent the Torah's attitude towards women. The Rambam writes as follows. This is Perek Tezvav of Isha's Halacha Chaf. V'chein sivu chachamim ala Isha, shetiyah mechabedes es baila biyoser midai. Chachamim obligated a wife to honor her husband a lot. Via lo aleha mora v'tasa kol maaseha apiv. So she should listen to him. Via b'eineha kemosar o melech mehaleches v'tavas livo umarcheches kol shiyisna. V'zehu derech b'neus Yisrael u'v'neisrael hakadoshim. Well, actually, that last line is going on. We'll get there in a second. Good. So this is what the Rambam says. Sounds like the Rambam saying women, married women, should always listen to their husbands, should be chavid their husbands. So that would explain this Gemara, the claim goes. Meaning to say, here it says married women should listen to their husbands. So memela, that would preclude their ability to be mekayim kibud avim. And therefore the Gemara says that married women are not obligated in kibud avim to the same degree as someone single. Now, there are three problems with this, one note. Problem number one, yeah? Okay, we're going to get to that pasuk. That's a good answer, an excellent answer, and we'll get to there in a minute. Okay, I think that actually might be a much better answer than this answer. But let's start with this answer. So a number of problems with the answer. Problem number one is that if you're going to say the obligation, since there's not, Rambam says there's an obligation for a wife to be mechabed her husband, that's the basis of this halacha. Well, they forgot the previous halacha in the Rambam, which says that there's an obligation for a husband to be mechabed his wife. So the previous halacha said, v'chein sivu chachamim, shia adam mechabed es ishto, yeser migufo, v'ohava kigufo. So a husband must be mechabed his wife, yeser migufo, so even more than himself, the ohava kigufo, love her like himself. Presumably this indicates that a person is not able to or certainly cannot be expected or obligated to love someone more than their wife, more than themselves. So it's ohava kegufo. You have to love your wife like you love yourself. But kavod, kavod, I could give someone more than I demand for myself, meaning say the kavod that I expect for myself, so I could give more to my wife than I expect for myself. So therefore you have to be mechabda yoser migufo and ohava kegufo. And if he has money, if he could afford it, he must do things for her good to the extent that he could afford. So, in addition to being mechabda, he has to be calm, patient. It's very interesting. This is a hard one. You can't be sad. I think the idea is that it doesn't mean you can never be sad, but it's a person's responsibility to sometimes be cheerful, because if he's upset, that makes everyone upset. And certainly, the low roge, certainly he can't be angry or the like. So, if we're going to say that the difference between husband and wife is because the Rambam said that there's a chiyuv of a wife to be mechabed her husband, which is true, but that doesn't make any sense, because there's also a chiyuv of a husband to be mechabed his wife. So that doesn't make sense that would be the difference. Also, it says chen tzivu chachamim in both of those. So it's a din derabbanan. We need to explain a pasuk, right? Also, there's nowhere in the Torah that says, midiraisa certainly, that a wife has to do the bidding of her husband. Nowhere. In fact, in terms of obligations, there are many more obligations on a husband towards a wife, on a Torah level, than on a wife towards a husband. Right? So with respect to a husband towards his wife, there's share ksus ba'ona, which presumably means a share is food, or taking care of, and ksus is clothing, so taking care of her material needs, as well as ona, so conjugal duties. The point is that all those are said with respect to a husband's obligation towards his wife, and doesn't say anything in terms of a wife towards a husband. It's true, if she refuses tashma, she would be moredes, and she would forfeit her ksuba, but it's still not even the same level of obligation as there is on a husband. So, so it's very hard to say that that's the basis of the pasuk. In fact, it would seem like that is impossible. And I will parenthetically point out, once we're doing these Rambams, that while the Torah is clear that there's an obligation on a husband to be mechabed his wife, and on a wife to be mechabed as her husband, it is interesting to note that the Rambam indicates that that doesn't mean that they do the same things for each other. In other words, the way in which a wife expresses her kavod towards the husband is a little different in the Rambam's formulation than the way the husband expresses his kavod for his wife. So, for example, when it comes to a husband towards a wife, the Rambam focused, among other things, on giving her gifts and the like. And I guess now is not the time to do this topic, but it is very interesting to look at the differences in terms of, well, again, there's an obligation for a husband on a wife and a wife to the husband for kavod, and that's something that's very much stressed. The Rambam does imply that there is a differentiation, meaning to say that, at least typically, in terms of expectations or what a husband could do to bring his wife happiness is different than what a wife could do to bring her husband happiness. So they're both equally obligated to bring each other happiness, though that might manifest itself in different ways. But in the end of the day, fundamentally, there's definitely a mitzvah kavod on each. So that can't be the basis of this distinction. And as the Rambam concludes these halachos, if they do this, so then this is derech benos Yisrael, uvnei Yisrael hakadoshim, hatahorim bezivugam, uvidrachim elu yeshuvan na'a umeshubach. They'll live together in peace and harmony. It's true. If the husband and the wife both follow these recommendations, these halachos, so indeed there will be peace and harmony in the family. But one way or the other, we are still left with the question of why is it that we say that a married woman cannot fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av va'em to the same degree as a, let's say, married man, if we don't find in the Torah meaning to say midoraisa, there are obligations upon a married woman towards her husband. Right? So what can that be referring to? So I think there are a couple of answers to this question, but we're going to focus on one, since it's your answer. And it's also Tosus' answer and Rav Moshe Feinstein's answer. And Rav Moshe basically answers, and Tosus already alludes to this, that part of the definition of marriage is a wife coming to her husband's home. That's in fact what nisuin means. It's hachnasa letoch besa. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. They could go and jointly rent an apartment in Washington Heights. And you could even get married and he could move to her old apartment. That's not against the Torah. But in terms of the definition of marriage, this is what actually nisuin is. Nisuin is hachnasa letoch besa. As we know, marriage is comprised of two steps. There's erusin and nisuin. At our weddings, we do them one right after another, though in Talmudic times they were often separated by up to a year. But in erusin, he marries her, betroths her, in the sense that she is asura l'chol ha'olam k'hekdesh, that's what kiddushin is, but they're not yet living together in marriage. It's actually a very fascinating idea that her status changes, their status changes, based off of that future orientation of what's going to happen. What is nisuin? Nisuin, sometimes called chuppah, is when she moves into his home and they make a home together. And that's what nisuin is. Now, if that's true, if that's a definition of nisuin, so then her being in his home, coming to his home and being in his home, may sometimes preclude the possibility of her being able to do kibud avim, because she is living in his home. And let's say his home is far away from her parents or the like. Therefore, she won't be able to do kibud avim in the same way. And I'll say, well, same thing for the husband. Answer is no. The truth is that the husband, as we talked about last week, even if he lives far away from his parents, if his parents need help, he must leave his home and go to the home of his parents and care for his parents. If that means moving out for the time that's necessary to take care of his parents, then he must do so. That's not true with respect to a wife. With respect to a wife, she cannot, at least without her husband's permission, just leave her home for weeks or months or whatever it takes to take care of her parents. That distinction, which the Torah might even allude to over here by saying ish imo v'aviv tirau, which is basically saying that sometimes a wife's or mother's obligation towards her family must trump her obligation to take care of her parents, such that if they are in conflict and she's unable to do both, she must put her family ahead of her parents. And in a sense, that's not true for the husband. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean that if the kids are starving, he should leave them and go take care of his parents. But generally speaking, that does mean that that, let's say, things like distance or time away from family do not exempt him from kibud av va'em in the same way that it does for a wife. And presumably this is a reflection of the fact that the mother, the wife, is the akaras habayis. She is needed in the home. The home can't function without her. The family needs her. And the Torah says, as important as kibud av va'em is, and clearly the Torah sees it as very important, her family must come first. So if those two responsibilities clash, so then family comes first. If they don't, if she's able to do both, so of course she must do both, like we said. It's not that there's a fundamental difference between man and woman in this regard, but there is sometimes a practical difference. And that is what is going on here in terms of this difference in obligation. So, is there a difference in terms of kibud av va'em between men and women? The answer is sometimes. Not fundamentally, but to the extent that a woman's home responsibilities or family responsibilities preclude her ability to do kibud av va'em, then she must put them first. And usually this isn't going to be the case for smaller things, or everyday things. But as we've talked about in past weeks, there are times that kibud av va'em responsibilities are quite onerous, especially when parents need a lot of help for their basic functioning. Machilo, mashkehu, malbisho, manilo, and that's something that that the Torah recognizes could be a big difference. I remember growing up, so my grandparents were older, and they lived in Israel, and my mother lived in Silver Spring, Maryland, and very frequently, many times a year, she was making 8 or 10 trips to Eretz Yisrael per year to take care of them. And like, you know, my grandmother would fall and hurt herself, and okay, there she was flying off to Eretz Yisrael for the next 2 or 3 weeks to take care of her. So in that case, she had the full support of my father, and we weren't little kids at the time, so she was able to do it, Baruch Hashem, and she was able to take care of her parents, and in a remarkable way, she taught me so much about kibud av va'em. But you could imagine that type of situation would arise, where if she were to, you know, run away from her family for 10 times a year, for, you know, weeks at a time to a different country, that would impact and preclude her possibility of taking care of her family. And that's the basis of this difference, I think, as understood by Rav Moshe. Yes?
The initial Gemara we were looking at, was that differentiating between a daughter to her parents, or
it was differentiating, yeah, between a son to her parents and a daughter to her parents. The answer is a married daughter to her parents is sometimes exempt from kibud av va'em when doing that kibud av va'em would impinge on her ability, her family responsibilities.
Or was it like if your mother and father both need a drink at the same time?
That was the second Gemara we said. That Gemara was a little less of an issue, though it might reflect a similar idea, because that's not necessarily reflecting the Din D'oraisa. So the Kasha in that Gemara isn't as strong, though it's there as well. That's why we focused on the first Gemara. Okay. So that's today's first topic. Today's second topic. This is a topic that, in a sense, isn't really practical nowadays. But I think it's interesting and brings out some interesting general Torah points and kibud av points. And that is there a... Oh, well, just one small parenthetical point. Just a very interesting parenthetical point. So what pasuk teaches us this difference between man and woman? Ish imo, correct. Ish imo vavitiro. So it's very interesting because you could ask the following question. If it makes sense that there would be a difference between man and woman with respect to kavod, right? Like we said, kavod is machilo, mashkeo, malbisho, manilo, taking care of your parents' physical needs, giving them, dressing them, and feeding them, and the like. But yira, lo yamo b'makomo, lo yeshev b'makomo, right? There's no reason why, just because I'm a woman is married, she's going to have to stand in her father's or mother's place or sit in her father and mother's seat, right? So this difference should have been expressed in the pasuk of kavod, not yira. So there are different answers to this question, but I'll tell you one of them, which is the Sefer HaMakna. So Sefer HaMakna, we actually referred to him, his chiddush last week. Sefer HaMakna says, you see from here the following. Even though we talked about how you could make the argument that obedience is not part of the mitzvah of kibud av v'em, meaning say, if my parents, my mother goes ahead and she tells me I should wear my coat outside. It's cold. You'll catch a cold. And I'm so uncomfortable. I don't want to wear a coat. It's so nice outside. So do I have to listen? So we said, well, you could make the case that you're not obligated because machilo, mashkeo, malbisho, manilo, those refer to taking care of your parents' physical needs. I have to give my mother a coat if she's cold. But if I wear a coat, so that's not her needs, right? So maybe you could argue I shouldn't have to listen. So the Sefer HaMakna says you do. And it's not because of kavod. You're right, kavod is machilo, mashkeo, it's because of yira. Because one of the examples of yira is eino soser dvarav, not to contradict them. And not to, so to go ahead, if my mother says, wear your coat, and I say no, so that's a chisaron, that's a violation of yira, which would mean that if a parent asks a child to do certain things, like take care of me, and doing so would preclude, would come into conflict of their home, of their family responsibilities, so that's when we would distinguish between man and woman, like we said. So that's why the fact that we learn this halacha from the parsha of Yira, as opposed to kavod, proves the maknas chiddush, which is that while obedience isn't necessarily included in kavod, it might actually be included in Yira. Okay. Fine. Yes?
I have a question on this point about women, I guess, obligating their husband to marry. So when this people actually
So if it's Biguach Nefesh, it's Biguach Nefesh. There's nothing to talk about. But the answer is, you know, hopefully the husband will be understanding and reasonable and the like, and they'll be able to work something out. But in terms of a formal obligation, so the Torah has to have this distinction, because otherwise she would have to leave her family and go. So, again, one hopes that everybody can work things out amicably and the like. And one thing that might mean is if they're sons and daughters, the sons have to step up because the daughters can't. It's sort of the opposite of what happens a lot of times. A lot of times the kivud falls on the daughters, not the sons. Again, at least in cases of family conflict, really it should be the opposite. So in good circumstances, everybody could work out a plan that, if not making everybody happy, works best for everybody. That's the goal, that's the ideal. But in the event that there is a conflict that can't be resolved, such that she feels like, look, either my parents aren't going to be properly taken care of, or my family is not going to be properly taken care of. So then, again, assuming it's not pikuach nefesh, like you said, so then you have to put your family's needs first. And that's the idea of this distinction. Yes? That's what the Makna says. Makna, Sefer HaMakna. Yes. I think his name is Rabbi Horowitz. He's also wrote the Hafla and the like, some other son.
So, let's say as a non-being obedient parent,
yeah, according to him, yes, it would be. It would be a violation of Yira as opposed to Kavod.
Okay, so it would be a violation of Yira.
So that was last week's shiur.
Okay.
I guess you could listen to it. You know, what we said last week is, and the Machna could agree to this, for the reason I'll tell you right now. What we said last week is that some understand that kavod, even though it's defined narrowly, is referring to things like taking care of their physical needs. But the idea behind the mitzvah, the ratzon ha-Torah, would extend to all requests that a parent makes. But the nafkamina, why did the Torah formulate it in terms of the narrow sense of things like taking care of their physical needs, is because that is something that a child must always do, more or less. But when it comes to other types of requests, so we might distinguish between things that, let's say, requests that are where parents ask of children inappropriate things that don't relate to the parents but crossed boundaries in terms of impinging on the child's life. So examples we gave last week are things like telling them what profession to choose or who to marry or the like. So then we say that kibbutz doesn't apply. They could argue that according to the Makna, so then yira applies. But even that isn't so simple, because it's only a violation of yira if it's chutzpahdik to disobey them. But if they're making an inappropriate request, then it could be it's not chutzpahdik to disobey them, in which case even the Makna would agree that with respect to certain types of requests, neither the mitzvah of kavod or yira applies. But again, for more details on that, that was last week's shiur. Okay. So again, the next question we're going to briefly discuss, I think because it's interesting, is whether Beis Din can compel children to do kibbutz av va'em. Now, as I said, for the most part, this question is not relevant nowadays, because Beis Din lacks the authority to compel anybody to do anything. Beis Din has no teeth. People who want to follow the Torah will listen to what Beis Din has to say and listen to what the Torah has to say. And someone who doesn't wish to follow the Torah, so there's no structure, communal authority, or the like to basically compel anybody to do anything. But once upon a time, Beis Din had the authority to compel people to do things, to administer punishments and the like. And not only did they have that ability, but it was an obligation upon Beis Din and upon the community to establish that. Shoftim v'shotrim titeh mechah b'chol sharecha. So if somebody generally refuses to perform a mitzvah, Beis Din will actually compel them, force them to fulfill that mitzvah. So, what about kibbutz av va'em? So, the answer is no. Why? Very interesting rule. That Beis Din never compels anyone to do something when it's matan schara b'tzida, when the Torah says what the reward is. In other words, then it's not Beis Din's responsibility. Hashem tells you what will be if you do it and what will be if you don't do it. And kibbutz av va'em is one of the few mitzvos where the Torah actually tells us the reward. What is that? Arichos Yamin, exactly. So therefore, Beis Din does not compel a person to do Kibud Av V'Em. Now, interesting question. So you're saying that it's not Hira. So it could be that they would. It's an interesting question. Maybe we'll get back to it in a minute. But when the Shulchan Aruch quotes that halach, he says it with respect to Kibud. He says, when we call Makom, in Beis Din Kofin al Mitzvahs Kibud Av V'Em. It's an interesting question, which gets back to what we discussed just 2 minutes ago, of the relationship between Kavod and Yira. How much are they linked and how much are they seen as independent mitzvahs? Anyway, so generally speaking, there's no obligation. Now, what an interesting question that arises is, though, that there is a Yerushalmi that says that one of the Amoraim and Yerushalmi said that if there's one halacha that's clear to me, it is that Beis Din are kofer, they compel a child to support a parent. What's going on here? Didn't we just say that we don't compel people to do Kibud Av V'Em? So the answer is as follows. The halacha is that we said last week that who has to pay for it, the mitzvah Kibud Av V'Em? Let's say my parents ask me to go shopping for them. So do I have to listen? Of course, mitzvah Kibud Av V'Em. Great. So they give me a shopping list. They text it to my phone. I happen to be that in my phone, in my wallet, I have two credit cards. My own credit card or my parents' credit card. How fortunate. I wish I still did. Anyway, so I have two credit cards. So whose credit card should I use? My credit card or my parents' credit card? So there's one opinion in the Gemara that says I should use my credit card. Like all mitzvos, we always say that the mitzvah is on the person who should pay for the mitzvah, the person obligated to do the mitzvah, right? I have to go ahead and buy arba minim, or buy matzah, right? So, and I could ask my parents to pay for it. But the obligation, the mitzvah is upon me, so I have to be the one that pays for it. So too, if there's a mitzvah Kibud Av V'Em for me, and part of Kibud Av V'Em is machilo, mashkehu, is going shopping for my parents, so I should be the one that has to pay for it. I should use my credit card. That's one opinion in the Gemara. But the other opinion in the Gemara says no. Not true. Kibud Av V'Em is Mishel Av V'Em, which means they have to pay for it, so I could use their credit card to go shopping. Now, parenthetically, why would that be? Why is it different than other mitzvos? Why is it different than matzah, or sukkah, or lulav? Perhaps the answer is that the mitzvah is not to buy the food. The mitzvah is Vachilo Mashkehu Malbisho Manilo. The mitzvah is to care for them. So therefore, I don't have to buy it. I could use their credit card. Great. So I use their credit card, I buy the food. What about if they can't afford the food? Okay, I'm Baruch Hashem. I have money, I could afford food, they can't afford the food. So then, the halacha is that I do have to support them. I do have to. I have to use my credit card to support them. Now, why? So there's actually a very interesting debate in the Rishonim about this. Some Rishonim, like this one, say that's because it's only Kibud Av V'Em Mishal'av. We only say the parents have to pay for it when they can afford it. If the parents can't afford it, then the kid has to pay for it. But that's a din in Kibud Av V'Em. That's a halach in Kibud Av V'Em. The halach of Kibud Av V'Em is I have to support my parents if they can't afford to support themselves. They can't afford to support themselves, then they have to pay for it. I have to help, but they have to pay for it. But we don't paskin that way. We actually paskin that in terms of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, I am not obligated to ever shell out money out of pocket. Why then do I have to support my parents if they can't support themselves? It's midin, tzedakah. The rules of tzedakah dictate that those closest to you come first. And who is closer than your parents? Nobody. So, that means that I have to go ahead and support my parents. Not midin kibud av ein. I have to shop for them, midin kibud av ein. I have to pay for the groceries, midin staka. That's the way we paskin. And now going back to the Yerushalmi says sometimes we'll compel, based on we'll compel a person to do it, to support his parents. That's true. It's not midin kibud av ein, it's midin staka. You could ask 1 second. Staka is also matan schar b'tzida, right? L'man yivercha Hashem l'techa, but there's also a lav. Lo samitz levavcha, v'lo sakus es yadcha. So therefore, based in when it says that based in compels a child toward his parents, it's midin staka. Now, if you want to know how far this obligation goes in terms of kibud av v'aim, so the Gemara says in Yerushalmi, and this is the pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, based off of the Rush. Is that let's say my parents don't have money, or whatever it is, let's say even regardless, I guess, my parents ask me to care for them. Right? My parents ask me to care for them. They ask me to go grocery shopping and clean up the house and help care for them. And the only way to do that is to miss work. So we saw last week I have to miss work. Okay. What about if I miss work, I'm going to, I'm not going to make any money. I won't have what to eat. So the halacha is, I think we mentioned this last week, that if I have what to eat for today, I have to take off work to go help them. If I don't have to eat for today, I could say, okay, I'm sorry, Abanima, I need to work today, I don't have what to eat. But if not, if I have what to work today, I have to go help them if I then run out of money. So tomorrow I'll go around begging. And if I don't do that, so that's what it means. That's what based in compels a person. Now, there's a very interesting question. So let's say a person's parents need money. They don't have money. So the kid, like we said, the child has to support them. Is he allowed to use miser money? This is actually a very common question, right? The child is supporting their parents. So I would think it would be totally okay. Because we just said it's medin staka. So if it's medin staka, I should be able to support my parents. However, the matter is not so simple. Because the Gemara says that you can't, at the very least, use miser, maybe miser ani, because it is a bizayim. It's a bizayim. So you can't use miser ani because it's a bizayim. Now, what does that mean? So one way to understand that is that means that if my parents knew that I was supporting them with my miser, so that is a bizayim to them. They feel like they're now charity cases. That might be that they are. They might be poor. But I have to serve my parents in a way that preserves their dignity. The truth is that applies to all aniyim, but certainly with respect to one's parents. And therefore, I can't use my charity funds because they would be disparaged. But theoretically, if that was the interpretation of the Gemara, if they don't know how I'm paying for these groceries, so then it would be okay. But other posts can point out that it's actually not that way. It's mizalzel the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. To use your charity funds to get out, you know, I don't want, so I don't have to use my own money for my parents. I'm going to use my miser. That, and there might be a difference between miser ani here and miser ksafim. That is a bizayon. Even if they don't know about it. Even if they don't know about it, it's still a bizayon, right? It's ki'ilu mezalzel al yedei kach v'kavod aviv. And it's a very subtle and interesting point, which is that there's two types of zilzel. There's obvious zilzel, where you cause someone to feel bad, but then there's zilzel to the mitzvah, where that's true even if nobody knows about it. And therefore, I shouldn't use ma'aser money, according to that opinion. Among the poskim, there's a debate. This is a maril that sounds like maybe it's okay for ma'aser ksafim. Ma'aser ksafim aren't the same level of obligation as ma'aser ani. Other poskim, based off of this gemara, say it's aser. The halacha is that if a person can afford to support his parents without using ma'aser, that is preferable. But if not, then it's okay to use ma'aser. One last minor point. Sometimes it comes up that we said that a child only has to support his parents when what? When the parents can't afford to support themselves. It's not uncommon that you have a situation where the parents can afford to support themselves, but they're not doing it. They're stingy, they're old, they're not making good cheshbonos, they think they can't afford it, and what do you do then? So technically speaking, since the parents can afford it, a child is not obligated to spend their own money. However, you don't want to leave your parents with not enough proper food, or more likely not enough proper medical attention or help or the like. So in cases like this, the kids should get together and come to an understanding that, you know, one day parents won't live forever and there's going to be a Yerusha, and whoever spent the money caring for the parents while they're alive will get reimbursed, and then they'll figure everything else out. Because you don't want to, a person doesn't want to leave their parents not being taken care of. And even though the parents can afford it, since practically speaking they don't want to do it, so the right thing to do is still to figure out how to make sure that they're supported. But in that case, so you can work things out that way. Okay. Yes?
Regarding missing work, mm-hmm. or taking care of one's parents, mm-hmm. having food at there, I think in most, I don't know, my impression today and today is like salaried jobs. You won't not have food if you don't go to work that day, but your boss certainly will not be impressed with you if you randomly take days off. You might lose your job.
Okay, so that's a very good question. We talked about that a little last week. I apologize. Don't worry. But the brief answer is that while you have to be willing to miss work to care for your parents, you don't have to suffer a loss. In other words, you have to forego income, but I don't have to suffer a loss. Now, if losing my job will be the result of my taking off work too frequently, so then that's different. That's considered a loss. The halachos of here, you know, if this comes up, you have to ask a shiloh, because they might be complex, how you define minyas revach and how do you define hefsid. But fundamentally, we distinguish between lost income versus out-of-pocket expenses or a loss of job. So if a person runs their own business, and so if they don't work one day, they'll make less money, but they won't lose their job, it's not going to affect their future earning capabilities. They just won't make money today. So that's when we said the obligation is to take off from work to care for one's parents. If, on the other hand, there'll be a loss of a job or a loss of money. Like, I sell certain things, and if I don't sell today, the merchandise will spoil, and then I'll lose money. So then we would say, no, that's considered an expense, and one isn't obligated. Yes?
So we're talking about taking money from my parents. Could we say that, regardless of where a person is taking that money from to give to their parents, the parents still know that their child is supporting them, and there's still that element of busha. So would it be possible to say that the DACA, because the money is coming from Meiser, like the parent or child can almost think that this money doesn't belong to the child anymore, it has to go to someone else?
So, yeah, I think there is something to that. And ultimately, the goal is to, in all forms of stock, is always to preserve the dignity of the recipient to the extent possible. However, what the Gemara also implies here is that there's a second aspect at play, not just the question of doing things that are offensive or hurtful to the parents, which obviously one must avoid at all costs. But a second, which is the attitude we have towards the mitzvah. We talked about in the very first year how the Gemara tells a story which teaches us that we have to see the mitzvah of kibud av v'em as an awesome opportunity and not something that we're trying to get out of. And when one could afford to use non-meiser money, and they go ahead and they use meiser money, so that to some degree, even if technically the obligation is rooted in charity, but it implies that their attitude towards this is, I'm doing this because, you know, I have to, because there's a mitzvah stuck and I'm going to use my tzedakah money. It's like, you know, when I go ahead and I work for a company and I buy things for the company, so I get reimbursed because it's not for me, and that's right. But when you go ahead, and even if, like, you know, you start making sure that you know, everything gets reimbursed when it's something that's not for work, so that implies a certain attitude towards that thing, right? And the attitude is, I don't want to spend any of my own money on this. And that's, you know, I would say, depending on what your work is, even in work, not that you shouldn't do this, but maybe that's appropriate attitude towards work. But it says something. If you have two workers, and one worker goes ahead and, they spend $2.25 buying some refreshments for a meeting and, like, insists on getting paid back. So that says something about their attitude towards the work effort. Maybe there's nothing wrong with that statement, but it does say something. And when you have that attitude towards kibud av v'em, so that's not the ideal. This is something we're excited about. This isn't something that we're looking to make sure we get reimbursed for. Okay. So, as usual, in the last 15 minutes, which turned out to be 2 minutes, we're going to just do one halacha from the very end of Hilchos Tshuva. We started this last week because the shiur from before Pesach, we were doing Hilchos Tshuva, and we didn't finish the very end, so we're going to do a little bit. So we're going to do one more halacha. So the first halacha that we saw last week was that when one serves God, one shouldn't do it ka'avadim. It's actually very much related to what we just said. One shouldn't do it ka'avadim ha'meshamshim esarav al-menas l'kabel pras, but rather, so you shouldn't do mitzvos just because you're going to get rewarded for doing the mitzvos. You shouldn't do it just to get olam haba, or you shouldn't avoid avero so you don't get gehenim. No, that is serving God out of yiras ha'onesh. And that's not the ideal. The ideal is, as we're going to read now, me'ava, to do it out of love. I said that relates to what we just said about kibud av v'em, because it's a similar thing. We said in our first year how the Torah tells us that our attitude towards God should be similar to that of our parents. Just like there's a mitzvah of kavod and yira with respect to parents, there's a mitzvah of kavod and yira to Hashem, b'chein b'din. Should be that way. Shishnei shlashtan, meaning father, mother, God, or shutfen bo, they're all responsible for my being here, my creation. So, just like we sort of said that when one serves their parents, they shouldn't do it out of a sense of duty and reimbursement and the like, but out of love. So too, when we do mitzvos, we should do them out of love, not just because we're hoping to get rewarded and the like. So, the Rambam now gives a very fascinating definition of this. Ha'oved me'ahava, osek b'toro v'mitzvos, v'holich b'nesivos ha'chachma. When someone serves God from love, he does Torah and mitzvos and follows the paths of peace. Lo mipnei davar ba'olam. Not for anything in the world. Lo mipnei yiras hara, not because he's afraid of punishment. Velo kedei lirosh tova, and not to get good, whether it's schar in olam hazeh or schar in olam haba. El osa es ha-emes, mipnei shehu emes, besof hatova lavo beglala. You do what's true because it's true. And in the end, the goodness will come. You can say, of course, you will be rewarded. There is such a thing as olam haba. Anyone who does Torah mitzvos will experience olam haba, and the nachas ruach and olam haba is greater than all possible nachas ruach and olam hazeh. All that's true. The schar will come, but that shouldn't be what motivates us. What motivates us should be love. Now, the obvious question is, on the Rambam, is that's not how I define love. Until I read this Rambam, I always thought, okay, doing it out of love is because you love Hashem. What does the Rambam mean when he says, you should do what's true because it's true? The Rambam is saying that our attitude towards Torah and mitzvot and chachma should be, we do what's right because it's right, not for any other reason. Not for any other reason. We do it because it's right. But what does he mean by emes? So, this is a bigger topic, but a couple of points to point out. Number one is, this reminds us of what the Rambam writes at the very beginning of Mishneh Torah, where he writes that ein emes kamitaso, the emes of God is like no other emes. Hashem Elokim emes. That refers to the truth of his existence. His existence is necessary as opposed to all other existences. But it's also one way of, can't really define Hashem ever, but one way to define Hashem is emes. Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. Not just in the sense of not lying. A person could also tell the truth and not lie. But there's something deeper here, which we'll try to understand. The yesod, he's saying, the difference between Oved Meira and Oved Ma'ava, is that Oved Meira is that I'm Oved Hashem for me. It's egocentric. Whether it's so I won't get punished, or so I get rewarded, or the like. Oved Me'ava is, it's not about me. Just like when I love a person, so I wish to bring them happiness and joy, and I care about them for them. It's not about me, it's about the other person. That's what Ahava is. So, likewise, being Oved Hashem Me'ava means it's not about me, it's about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, if we were to translate what that means for Hashem, it means we would say, okay, so why should I do Torah mitzvot? Not for my sake, but for Hashem's sake. But that's not precise either, because we don't, in reality, give something to Hashem when we do mitzvot, like the Pasuk says in Iyov, and this is echoed in many psukim, and Dvarim especially, when we do mitzvot, so Hashem is lacking nothing, we don't give him something that he lacked. It's not like when you love a person, where you are bringing them joy by giving something to them, by being mashlim them. That's shayach for a person who could be chaser. So for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ahava means something else. It's not... So how does the Rambam express this? The Rambam expresses this because by saying, your osa es ha-emes mipnei shehu emes. You do what's right because it's right. That's what it means to do something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it's not the same as giving it to a person. And the truth is, even for a person, that's true. Even for a person, we read to some degree. We read before the Rambam about the chiyuv of a husband to be mechabed his wife. And he said that one aspect of that is giving her gifts. So how is that coupled? That's the basic obligation. Shekhsos Fa'ona. The answer is no. Kavod is to give her things that she doesn't need. And that's what kavod is. That's what ava is. Giving somebody something that they need is practical. Ava is, right, this is, I think a lot of guys, myself included, don't quite understand this always. Like, you know, what in the world is the point of buying flowers? Right? It's the stupidest thing in the world. They're very nice for a day or 3 days. But the Yesod HaDvarim is what it expresses. And I don't know, maybe that's dafka because you're getting something that's gonna, that has no practical utility whatsoever. It expresses that more than other things. It doesn't have to be flowers, it could be tachshit and all sorts of things. And that's the yesod here. And in fact, the Rambam is gonna compare the love of Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the love of spouses. And I guess next week when we pick up on this Be'ezras Hashem, we're going to more fully define what Avas Hashem is and who's capable of doing it. It's not an easy thing. Okay, everyone have a good evening.